This is the Tech Talk podcast from RNIB.
First things first, before we talk about the thing that we really want to talk to you about, that everyone else will be intrigued to hear about as well, let's talk about you. Because you're a YouTuber, aren't you? You make YouTube videos and I guess you blog and vlog and all that stuff?
Correct, yeah.
So tell us about it. How did you get into it?
I mean, I think I just kind of woke or grew up at the right time that YouTube was emerging. I mean, I didn't really find my niche until more recent, but I've been on the platform since 2006. I was about 10 years old, and I've always been intrigued by making movies, video creation. And the thing that really sparked that was the fact that when I looked through a viewfinder, I could really see. I could see from a distance for the first time because I have albinism and nystagmus, which is non-correctable. So yeah, cameras just really intrigued me as more than just a medium or a tool to create, but as an assistive technology. And that's what kind of got me into video creation today.
That's really interesting because because I've got nystagmus as well. We match. And I've also got optic nerve hyperplasia, which means basically the optic nerve is damaged and has been since birth. So, you know, I get what you're talking about because I was into making movies for a long time and making little films and stuff. And a lot of people used to question why I would ever get into it because they'd say, well, why? You can't see what you're doing. But you're right. When you've got that viewfinder up at your face or you've got that little screen, you can see much more of the world, much more close up than you can in the real world. It's bizarre, but it kind of works.
Absolutely. And I think people always don't realize that there's a spectrum of blindness.
Yeah.
It's always just an on-off switch and there's nothing in between when that is very, very inaccurate.
Very inaccurate, yeah.
No, absolutely. I do the same thing as well. If I drop something on the floor, I tend to get my phone and put the camera on because it's just something about the higher contrast and it's something that's really hard to explain. Like you say, you know, trying to explain what you can actually see, what your vision's like, it's virtually impossible.
So let's ask the obvious question then. What can you see?
So my vision, it's about, on average, 2300 of the acuity. Basically, the way I see, I have videos that kind of emulate my vision. One is called 20 Years of Continuous Vertigo, and it's a short film where people can kind of see what it's like to view through my vision in like first person. Really what that video focused on was the nystagmus part. I recently created another short film back in February called Looking on the Brighter Side, and it's a movie about albinism. So what I do see is constantly things are never in focus. Things are constantly like, if I start focusing on something, it's really starts moving. Though it's not really moving, it's just my eyes trying to dance, basically.
Yeah, I get that.
I also have photophobia. My eyes can be very sensitive to light, and so oftentimes I'm wearing sunglasses, whether that's indoors or at night or outside. During the day, the albinism itself just kind of has some blurriness. So those are kind of the three layers where you have the vertigo, blurriness, the photophobia, and just the albinism's lack of vision. And it creates this unique vision. I mean, I'm still lucky I can see color and I can see shapes to an extent, but lack of details there unless I really zoom up. But technology's great.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, you know, you make the videos, you make the YouTube channel, and, you know, you mentioned the videos, which, by the way, is a brilliant way of plugging the channel. Well done on
Thank
that
you.
One. But on that point, you know, there is a video on there which a lot of people around the world were very interested in watching, and that was the time you met Tim Cook. You lucky person. How did you manage to get an interview with Tim Cook when I've been trying for 5 years to get him on this program?
So we'll back up a little bit. A little over a year ago, I made a movie called How Apple Saved My Life. That movie came about because I was just trying to create a video about accessible technology. And I was just trying to find all the accessible tech, the things that I don't have a hassle using. And I realized all those products around me were Apple products. So then I really thought about it, and I realized like how much these have really impacted my life. So what happened was I decided to just kind of tell a little bit. I mean, I've done it in parts where I've told a bit of my life story, but in different areas, you know, the mental health area I focused on in one video, the school area in another video, but this one I really focused on school with a little bit of the mental health portion of my life, and specifically how technology impacted that, and the independence and the really the hope that tech gave me. And it all happened to be Apple technology, how it allowed me to pursue video with the, you know, the fact that I can edit my own videos but be zoomed in like 500 times into the screen, something that I couldn't really do growing up working on like Windows Movie Maker or Sony Vegas on Windows, because it's just at the time when I was using Windows, the magnifier either was very, very limited or didn't exist. I can't remember. But basically that film then sparked, I guess Apple saw it, and Tim Cook ended up tweeting out that video about 4 days later. So then that video even caught on further with like the Huffington Post, CNN. And so from there, moving forward, Apple, I guess I was just on their radar. They were aware of who I am. And then kind of fast forward to about a year later, Apple's kind of been a big supporter of GAD, Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And this year it was like a week-long event on their campus where they had all kinds of interesting and exciting events. Some I can talk about, some I probably can't, but...
Go on.
Ah, yeah, come on. Tell us all. When are they bringing out a car?
I got to share a good portion of the trip in another video, actually, that came out shortly after the Tim Cook video, which is called Visiting Apple's Headquarters Campus. Kind of a neat thing. We get to see a little bit more behind the scenes of what it's like visiting Apple, but most people don't get to see. While I was there, yes, they ended up allowing me to interview Tim Cook, the CEO, and we had a nice conversation over coffee about the importance of accessibility and Apple's current stance on what accessibility means to them. And I think overall it was a great discussion and something that a lot of people need to hear.
Wow. So when you went there, did you know you were going to interview Tim Cook?
Not really. Well, it was kind of a last-minute thing that was arranged. He's a busy guy, but I'm glad he made an hour of time to chat with me and some others in the community. There's two other YouTubers who were with me as well. We all kind of did our own style. Mine was more, I think, of a traditional interview, if you will, kind of style. One was more of a fun discussional video, and the other one was a really neat video that kind of talked more about like fitness and music. And
well, I got to pick you up on saying you thought yours was more traditional. I just loved the way you introduced him, whereas you said, oh, I've got this guy with me today. I'm going to let him introduce himself. It's like, oh, okay, it's just some Joe blogs. Hello, well, my name is Tim.
This guy called Tim.
That's Tim Cook.
Well, people have asked me about that, the way I introduced him. Some people thought it was a little like unprofessional. Some people thought it was kind of neat. The way my idea behind it was, well, I don't think I can do it justice, what this person does. And I also like to see how people do introduce themselves. You know, you can kind of tell a lot about a person. I'm not going to like really get into detail, but you can tell a lot about a person just from the way that they share who they are. And so by putting him on the spot like that, I think that's the best way to sort of set the tone for this interview.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it was great, and a great opportunity to sit down and pin him down and ask him questions on accessibility. Because, you know, when we see Tim, we generally see him standing on stage announcing new products or whatever it might be, but we very rarely hear him talk about accessibility and all the things that come with it. For you, getting a chance to visit the Apple campus and getting a chance to meet and interview Tim Cook must have been great. I wonder, though, what your thoughts are on the other side of the world, shall we say, the Android side of the world. Because, you know, there are people out there who will say, and we'll be listening to this with two fingers down their throat, saying, oh, here we go, more fanboy talk. And I get that, and we all get that to some degree. But you know, you say Apple saved your life. Do you think anyone will ever make a video called Samsung Galaxy S8 saved my life?
I don't see why not. But I think really what it came down to was Apple had this ecosystem and these different products that I use for different things all talk to each other and communicate with each other better than I think anything else on the market. I got to use my iPhone in class. I was using that to scan papers, and then it would be shot right to my Mac, and my Mac would be able to use like Adobe Acrobat to take that PDF and suddenly scan it to have it read it to me. And creating those accessible PDFs in like less than a minute or two was pretty important for me to succeed in school, or at least pass in school, because it was a little late when I really discovered the Mac. I wish I had known it a little bit sooner. However, talking on the other side of things, like, I have had Android in the past before I had an iPhone, but I find the accessibility to be more comfortable on iOS. People can disagree, and that's totally okay. People have their own preferences of the platforms. That's cool. So I think Google's been making great strides with accessibility as well, but I think the other thing is when you have these manufacturers creating so many different devices, there becomes an inconsistency with what to expect on your device. What settings are there? What capabilities? You know, are the manufacturers manipulating any of the accessibility, or are they adding in their own? It can be a good thing and a bad thing, I guess. That's just sort of my perspective on it. If you're looking at an Android device, definitely play with the accessibility ahead of time. Do it with any device, really. But even if you think you're familiar with the operating system, again, it can be different on every device, new piece of hardware. So
it's always interesting to me because we hear from so many different people who say to us, and we've had this conversation, Sean and I have been subject to this so many times, you know, you're Apple fanboys, you only ever talk about Apple and how wonderful Apple is and all that stuff. And, you know, that's our choice. We choose to use Apple, as you do. And that's just the choice we've made. I mean, we could easily switch tomorrow and say, do you know what, if, you know, Samsung or LG or whoever bring out the next big great phone and it happens to have amazing accessibility through Android in it, then I'll consider it, we'll think about it. When we hear about Apple fanboys, what we really mean is iPhone and iPad fanboys. We don't really mean Mac fanboys, because when it comes to the other side, you've got Microsoft, you've got Windows, and a lot of blind people using JAWS or NVDA and prefer using that. So, you know, this idea that, you know, if you're in Apple, you're all in with it, that's not actually the case, is it?
No, and I mean, people can have their own devices, you know, for different things. I totally don't think you should limit yourself. I use Mac. I mean, for one, yes, it's accessible out of the box, and everything I needed to do, it does already. I also have Final Cut Pro. Final Cut is what I use to edit my videos. It's a piece of software made by Apple for video editing, and that's what I'm most comfortable using for my workflow. It's the fastest, and so that's why I'm not over on Adobe right now. It's the whole package for me.
Like you just said there, I think it just depends whatever works for you. You know, it's good that we've actually got this choice now. We're not stuck with just Apple or Android or Mac or Windows. You know, you've got that choice. So if you find something that works for you, then stick with it. But I wanted to say, I think this is my opinion, but I think if it wasn't for Apple, I don't think we would have accessibility in the mainstream devices like we do now. So I think Apple definitely needs some recognition for that, if nothing else.
Absolutely. What I liked so much about the iPhone was the fact that when they introduced VoiceOver, which was on the 3GS and Zoom, it felt more inclusive, more like it's a device for everyone.
Yeah.
What that means is something that my mom and dad use, two people who are sighted, that never really, I felt like, have fully grasped my world, all of a sudden they're using the same device that I'm using to see the world. And it really, I think, normalizes accessibility. It's kind of incredible how far we've kind of come. I mean, I could be walking around with a giant miniature CCTV or digital magnifier with me all day, but the fact that I can get that same similar features right on the iPhone, something that's much thinner and right in my pocket and has a really good camera for that size. I'm pretty content with how technology is really, in a way, it's normalizing disability or mainly accessibility at this point. That's the way I'm kind of seeing it right now.
I think that's a really good phrase, normalizing accessibility. I'm going to steal that one.
That's a new tag for the show. We've just decided that. Sorry,
that's really
James,
good.
We've just taken it. Yeah.
Sounds
but
good.
It does, you know, there is, I mean, you do feel sort of set apart, almost segregated anyway. And if you're carrying around technology that's the size of a wardrobe and specifically designed for you, you know, it even makes you feel even less involved. And like you say, once you're using the same technology, the same devices as everyone else, as your mum and dad or the rest of your family, you know, you suddenly, it's really hard to explain, but you just feel like you're part of it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And what I really, really like is, again, it's something that is just in my pocket and I'm ready to use it a different way, but I can still use it the same way as everyone else. And another thing you said, I think there was the fact that it comes to your comfort level. It's all out of the box. Instead of something that is specifically designed for you, this giant clunky thing, this is still a device that was designed for me. That's what I think Apple's stance on accessibility is it's always there from the forefront. We saw it with the Apple Watch. When the Apple Watch launched, that thing had VoiceOver, Zoom, Bold Text, some hearing features as well. And so I think when Apple puts accessibility forward and it's a priority, that's what I like to see. And that's what I want to see more from these companies. Instead of it just being a firmware update that comes 6 months later, it's nice to have it out of the box. Of course, there's always going to be room for improvements and new features added. But once again, it's nice to see that a company wants their product to be used by as many people and all kinds of people right from the get-go.
Absolutely. On the point of your video work you do, what kind of cameras do you use? How do you do that? I mean, is there any sort of anything you do with the cameras to make them more accessible to you, or do you find that most of them generally just are?
So with cameras, that's a good question. I don't try to limit myself with any specific camera. I've been using, I own a cinema camera, something that's like $4,000, and it's nice, and I use it more for studio work, stuff that is going to be more cinematic, short film based. But at the same time, I own a couple of DSLRs, I own point-and-shoots, but my main driver that I've been using in my more recent videos is the iPhone. The iPhone, I think, has a pretty incredible camera, and I find it accessible to just carry around with me and use that as a camera, because it's simple to pull out right from the lock screen. I always carry like a little grip with it, so it has a stabilizer, and yeah, that's sort of been my camera of choice as of late. I've used that for my more recent my Coachella video and my visiting Apple campus video. In fact, the Tim Cook video itself was actually shot on an iPhone.
It seems appropriate, doesn't it?
I was going to say, did Tim make you do that?
Yeah. Well, you should have pulled out your Samsung and said, right, hang on, I'll just set this up.
No, like even the fact that I did actually set up a point and shoot and like two DSLRs. The DSLRs stuck. You can tell that it was shot with two DSLRs from the close up shots, but the wide angle, I just felt like the iPhone did the trick, so I stuck with it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It was a great video to watch, and you know, it's actually even more fascinating finding out how you do it. Because I think a lot of people out there would be interested. I know it's something I enjoy doing. I'm sensing that you and I need to talk more on this topic, James. It's brilliant. So what you're basically saying to us is, I mean, Sean and I are keen to get Tim on, and if Tim happens to be listening to this interview, then, you know, he's more than welcome to come on the show, but I'm thinking that the only way to get his attention is for Sean and I to make some kind of movie together, which I think will be less like your kind of movie and more like some kind of, I don't know, Scooby-Doo or Thelma and Louise type farce.
Where did Thelma and Louise come from?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of two, Cagney and Lacey. I don't know.
We'll work on it. We'll workshop this. Don't worry.
We'll put that in planning. Yeah, I think we need a storyboard and stuff. It's great to hear you talk about what you do, James. For people who want to follow you and find out more, and I really encourage them to check out your YouTube channel, where can they find it?
They can youtube.com/JamesRath, and that's James and then R-A-T-H, drop that W, and you are set.
Thanks, James.
Cool, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for downloading the Tech Talk podcast from RNIB. Find more podcasts from RNIB on Audioboom, iTunes, and the Apple Podcast app.